Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Our lesson last Sunday dealt with the evils of gambling. In that discussion, I defined gambling as involving three major elements. First, the payoff. If there is no payoff, there is no gambling. Second, the transfer of something of value on the basis of mere chance. There is some chance, some risk, in virtually every human endeavor, but it is not generally mere chance. Third, there has to be an agreement to pay by the bettors. I also discuss some of the scriptural principles which may be used to oppose gambling, legal or illegal. The principle of stewardship of money and other material possessions should discourage our misuse of our money for any foolish purpose, and that includes gambling. Gambling can so control a person's life that he becomes just as much an addict as if he were drinking alcoholic beverages or using other drugs. We also examine gambling on the basis of the Golden Rule. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do you even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Matthew 7:12. How could anyone take from another without giving him value in return? The Golden Rule must be the basis of our dealings with one another, or we shall become insensitive to the wants and needs of our fellow human beings. Finally, I pointed out that gambling has a tendency to discourage honorable employment as a means of providing for one's family and one's own needs. Paul told the Thessalonians that if any would not work, neither should he eat. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. Work is honorable, useful, necessary. Gambling is evil, destructive, non-productive. But gambling is very popular, exciting, and legal in every state in our union, except four. How could so many people be mistaken, deceived, and evil? You and I both know by observation and by consulting the Word of God that the rightness or wrongness of an activity cannot be determined by popular vote. Drinking, adultery, lying, and other sins are just as widespread as gambling. Are we going to defend these kinds of behavior because of their popularity? There have been times in history when infanticide was almost universally practiced. Was it right because almost everybody was doing it? My friends, if everybody gambles, drinks alcoholic beverages, commits adultery, and practices abortion, these activities are still an abomination in the sight of Almighty God. God's law, as revealed in the Bible, must be our standard of right and wrong. Paul warned the Romans and us about being conformed to this world. Romans 12:2. We must know the truth and live by it, even if there are only two or three in the entire universe who so live. Last Sunday morning, I promised that we would examine in today's lesson some of the arguments which the supporters of legalized gambling offer. You would think that no one, regardless of his background, would ever want to see such destructive practices as gambling legalized. What moral basis can be offered for taking from another without giving value in return? How can we ever justify taking on the basis of mere chance? How can we bring ourselves to violate the Lord's Golden Rule? I do not know how men and women can be so hard-hearted toward their fellow men, but I know they can be. Gambling presents irrefutable evidence of that fact. Please consider the arguments that pro-gambling people present, and think about those arguments as we analyze them and show how really foolish they are. One of the most forceful and popular arguments for legalizing gambling relates to the tax revenue which may be realized by the local, state, and federal governments. Many of our governmental units are seeking new ways of obtaining money for the services they render to their respective constituents. They tax our houses, our lands, our automobiles, our incomes, and even our breathing, or so it seems sometimes. I can sympathize with the mayors of our various cities, the county commissioners, the governor, and the legislative bodies of our states and of our federal union. New taxes are about as popular as the 7-year itch, and just as difficult to get rid of once they are a part of our tax system. Having lived in many different communities in various states makes me aware of some of the problems relating to taxation. Several Tennessee legislators are seriously considering legalizing some form of gambling to relieve the tax burden on our citizens, or at least to prevent the necessity of raising taxes on property and instituting an income tax. I certainly do not want to see taxes raised, and I am not in favor of an income tax. No one with whom I am familiar wants to pay more taxes. All of us, especially as we get older, are concerned when taxes become so burdensome that people on fixed incomes can no longer afford to pay taxes on their own homes. That has happened in some communities across our nation, and it is a disgrace to our American system. While I would prefer to see taxes lowered, and certainly not raised, yet I would prefer seeing them raised than having gambling in any form legalized in Tennessee. I want to examine two forms of gambling that are used in several American states to provide funding for various governmental activities: paramutual betting and lotteries. There are many other kinds of gambling which deserve our attention, but these probably get the most publicity. Both kinds of gambling do enormous damage to the participants, to their families, and to the state. We shall discuss these forms of gambling in the order that I mention them. Paramutual betting has been recommended by some Tennessee legislators as one way of relieving our tax burden, and also as a means of building our economy through the raising of thoroughbred horses. The Commercial Appeal on Thursday, October the 13th, 1983, printed an article on this topic: legalized betting seen as windfall to state coffers. The horse farm industry now in Tennessee produces about $470 million in annual business. If paramutual betting were legalized, that could pump about $600 million or $800 million per year into the state's economy. Obviously, these are very impressive figures, but there are some aspects of this industry that need closer examination. Last Sunday, I mentioned an outstanding book on gambling, Gambling, A Deadly Game, by Dr. Larry Braidfoot. Dr. Braidfoot shed some light on the matter of horse racing that all of us need to see. Although thoroughbred horses sometimes sell for as much as $8 to $10 million each, that wealth is not spread around for many to share. Besides, over 50% of the breeders are losing money. In fact, Larry Fitzpatrick, president of the International Thoroughbred Breeders, estimates that about 90% of the owners of racehorses lose money. Dr. Braidfoot affirms that paramutual betting is the most widely practiced form of gambling legalized for the purpose of raising revenue for states. Page 66. Paramutual betting on horses was first used in the United States in 1909 at the Kentucky Derby. Has horse racing lived up to its promises of providing tax revenues and a better economy in the state of Kentucky? Please listen to these facts from Dr. Braidfoot's book. Kentucky is the heartland of the thoroughbred industry, but legalized paramutual gambling has not been a financial boon to the state. In 1982, the state of Kentucky received a total of $10,860,000 from 292 days of thoroughbred racing in the state. This represented a 14% decrease over 1981. It was about 3/10 of 1% of the state budget. Page 69. My friends, I want to read again that last statement. The amount of money received from horse racing in the state of Kentucky in 1982 was about 3/10 of 1% of the state budget. 3/10 of 1%. It does not sound as if the state of Kentucky is getting rich on its parimutuel betting. Dr. Braidfoot talks about proposals in Tennessee to legalize horse racing and dog racing. A private group of businessmen promoting parimutuel gambling in Tennessee projected state revenues of $115 million, or approximately 10 times the income received by the state of Kentucky from its thoroughbred racing tracks. While proposing such items as a dog racing track in downtown Nashville, no projections were made of the expenses which would be associated with providing road construction and city services for a $30 million track. Yet the study was able to project a conservative estimate of $11,500,000 annual revenue to the state from thoroughbred tracks in Tennessee, which was about $1 million more than Kentucky received from its thoroughbred tracks in 1982. The realistic estimate was about $15 million, or almost $5 million more than Kentucky received from its tracks. Pages 74 and 75. If the ones who raise horses do not make great amounts of money, and apparently very few do, and the state does not get rich from taxes on racing, then who are the chief beneficiaries of horse racing and dog racing? If you know much about gambling, you can answer that question without the slightest hesitation. The crime syndicates make more money than anyone else, in fact, than everyone else combined. Dr. Braidfoot has an interview in his book on legalized gambling and crime with FBI Director William H. Webster. Mr. Webster was asked, "How do you feel about legalized gambling? Is that a factor in encouraging crime?" Mr. Webster replied, "Well, in my position, I hesitate to take moral positions on legislative issues. But I pointed out at the time that Atlantic City was going into casinos that we knew of no situation in which legalized gambling was in place where we did not eventually have organized crime. Crime doesn't always show in the same way. In Atlantic City, organized crime influence is coming through the control of goods and services. It's different from the skimming we have seen in Las Vegas. We're also seeing evidence of corruption as organized crime tries to reach the Gaming Commission through other state officials. So I really don't see how one can expect to run legalized gambling anywhere without serious problems, fraudulent tickets, counterfeit lottery processes. Anytime organized crime sees an opportunity to put a fix on something, to get an edge on something, it'll be there. And gambling is still the largest source of revenue for organized crime." Mr. Webster was then asked, "What about government involvement in lotteries?" He answered, "Well, the argument is always made that we should give the poor people a little hope. But the probabilities of winning on a lottery ticket are so minuscule that it has to be called a false hope. The states really have to think seriously about what they are doing to their own citizens when they push for something like that." Pages 85 and 86. Sean McWeeny, chief of the Organized Crime Section, Criminal Investigative Division, FBI, gave the following information in an interview conducted in January 1984. "Legalized gambling does not reduce illegal gambling, but instead increases it. The major problem is credit. Legal gambling creates new gamblers who switch over to illegal gambling when their money is exhausted. Those who go overboard in their betting are likely to wind up getting involved with loan sharks. Only then, when they are unable to pay the exorbitant fees, do they run into the violent aspect of organized crime. James B. Adams is the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety. Mr. Adams makes these comments on legal gambling. Once parimutuel gambling is made legal, an untapped reservoir of non-betting individuals will join the already existing number of bettors. Second, legal betting cannot compete with illegal betting because of certain advantages to the illicit bettor. Availability of credit, better odds which are often available, and obvious tax advantages. Bookies do not report customers' winnings. Combine to make illegal gambling much more attractive. Legalizing parimutuel betting would lead to a marked increase in illegal gambling activity as the ranks of bettors increase. The connection between gambling and organized crime is another factor which we cannot ignore. This relationship is obvious when you list the states where organized crime families and activities have located: New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Nevada, California, and Louisiana. All of these states have legalized gambling activities. Legalizing parimutuel betting in this state would provide organized crime with a substantial profit-making opportunity that would be hard to ignore. A question regarding organized crime needs to be asked at this time. In what ways can organized crime infiltrate the horse racing industry to engage in their nefarious activities? Dr. Braidfoot lists the following with a brief discussion of each. First, ringers. Fast horses are substituted for slow horses. The Thoroughbred Racing Protective Bureau testified in 1973 that this practice was so expensive that it had to be done by organized crime, pages 88 and 89. Second, bookmaking, that is, off-track bookmaking. The amount of money bet illegally with organized crime's bookies at the track often exceeded the amount legally wagered at the betting windows. Third, computer fraud. The Florida grand jury, which investigated organized crime's influence in gambling, also found evidence that the totalizator, the computer which totals the bets and fixes the odds on racing, was being used to allow skimming of the money wagered. Page 91. Dr. Braidfoot also lists and discusses the use of drugs in fixing races and other forms of cheating. But these should suffice to let you know that gambling, every phase of it, is dirty business. As Dr. Braidfoot says, gambling is a deadly game. Before our time expires, let me say just a few words about state-operated lotteries. Television, radio, and other news media publicize winners of mega bucks that have been won in state lotteries. Several states now operate lotteries with the express purpose of preventing raises in state taxes. Tennessee is being considered by certain politicians for state lotteries. Lotteries are supposed to be an easy and painless way of providing state revenues. They are an inexcusable means of taking people's money and giving them nothing in return. What are the chances that an individual will win in the state lotteries? Dr. Braidfoot reports that an official of the New York Lottery admitted the odds of being struck by lightning, about 1 in 2 million, were better than 1 in 3.5 million odds of winning that state's $22 million jackpot. Page 33. In Ohio, where a lottery jackpot of $27 million made headlines, the odds were even greater, about 1 in 9 million. In fact, lottery makes the worst payoff on a percentage basis of any legal form of gambling. Dr. Bradford makes these comments about lotteries. Even people who don't want to talk about Christian morals ought to be questioning the morality of a state foisting such a sham on its citizens under the guise of a painless form of tax revenue. They are described as a painless way of raising tax revenues, although they are among the most regressive forms of taxation ever practiced. By regressive forms of taxation, Dr. Bradford means that lotteries generally appeal to the poor, the ones who can least afford to spend their money on gambling schemes. In fact, in most states, lottery outlets are concentrated in poorer neighborhoods. One highly informative study was done in Newcastle County, Delaware, in 1979. The study found no lottery outlets in the upper-income neighborhoods where 17,000 persons lived. There was one lottery outlet for every 17,000 persons in upper-middle-income neighborhoods. There was one lottery outlet for every 5,000 persons in the lower-middle to middle-income neighborhoods. There was one lottery outlet for every 1,900 people in the poorest neighborhoods. Page 39. There is much more from Dr. Bradford's book and from other sources that I would like to discuss with you, but time will not allow it today. Instead, let me make a few observations which I believe are in order. First, political and religious leaders do their constituents and their members a great disservice when they fail to speak out on great moral issues like gambling and alcoholic beverages. Mayors, city and county leaders, governors, legislators, and presidents have the duty before God to protect their people from financial and moral bankruptcy. If any political leaders are in my audience this morning, please think about this matter seriously. Vote the way you know is right, even if it means that you will not be elected again. Have the courage of your convictions to do what God wants you to do, not what may be popular or expedient. Those leaders, whether religious or political, who will be remembered as having made worthwhile contributions to their nation, will be the ones who provided moral leadership for their communities and their states. It might not be popular in Atlantic City, New Jersey, or in Las Vegas, Nevada, to speak out about the evils of gambling, but dedicated, concerned leaders will do so regardless of the consequences. I plead with you, whether you are a political leader or not, to use your voice and your vote to keep gambling out of Tennessee and away from your community. Since gambling is a moral issue as well as a political one, preachers, church members, and other religious people must become informed and then take a stand for decency and morality and godliness. Obviously, I could not, in these two lessons, discuss every phase of gambling that we need. If I discussed every phase of gambling, it would take weeks and even months. Instead, let me again recommend Dr. Larry Bradford's outstanding book, Gambling, A Deadly Menace. Let me also recommend Ovid Damaris' new book, The Boardwalk Jungle. This latter book by Damaris tells how greed, corruption, and the mafia turned Atlantic City into the boardwalk jungle. If you want to know more about the connections between gambling and organized crime, by all means, read The Boardwalk Jungle. It is a frightening book, but tells exactly how the mafia becomes involved whenever and wherever gambling is legalized. Later, I want to investigate the connections of the mafia with gambling, so we shall drop the subject for the time being. My friends, gambling and decency are not compatible. I am not accusing all gamblers of being gangsters, because I do not believe that. I am saying, however, that gambling leads to all sorts of vicious crimes, including murder. It does not contribute to the welfare of individuals or of the state. It drains money from the families who can least afford it. It has nothing to commend it and everything to oppose it. It is a parasitic activity and must be eliminated wherever possible. I'd like to close today's discussion of gambling with a rather long excerpt from Dr. Braidfoot's book, Gambling, a Deadly Menace. One prominent Tennessean who supports legalization of gambling affirmed that gambling is not a moral issue. It is a financial one. Please listen to Dr. Braidfoot. It is a moral issue when the state decides to derive income from an activity which is a highly regressive form of taxation that affects poor people more extensively than affluent people. It is a moral issue when a state decides not only to tolerate gambling, but to get in the business of planning games, engaging in mass media promotional activities, and targeting its citizens through extensive marketing analyses in the hopes of creating new gamblers to contribute taxes through an inefficient form of tax farming. It is a moral issue when a state adopts a form of gambling that will draw off large amounts of money, especially from the poor people, for whom the state supposedly has a responsibility to provide assistance. It is a moral issue when a state adopts a form of gambling which in all probability will increase the extent and the amount of illegal gambling. It is a moral issue when a state engages in naive projections and adopts financial planning that amounts to putting a shoddy patch on a state's long-term financial problems. The morality involved is not exclusively sectarian, religious, or even Christian morality. Page 202. My friends, if you have questions or comments regarding today's lesson on gambling, I'm expecting to hear from you. We must not legalize gambling any kind in the state of Tennessee. Next Sunday's lesson will be the sacredness of all human life. This will be the first in a long series on bioethical issues such as abortion, infanticide, euthanasia, suicide, genetic engineering, and such like. Please continue to listen. Until next Lord's Day morning, we thank you and may God richly bless you.